Now, one of the guests I couldn't speak to at the Forbidden Knowledge Conference was Alan Alford, and I've got him on the phone now. Pleased to be able to speak to him. Good morning, Alan.
Morning, Russ.
That's it. Although this will be going out in the evening, it's a pre-recorded interview, so we're okay to say morning. People will understand, I'm sure. Alan, tell us what you were doing at Forbidden Knowledge.
I was giving a lecture on the Great Pyramid entitled Secret Chambers of the Great Pyramid.
Right, now secret chambers obviously always brings up a feeling to people that it's something that has been hidden away from public knowledge, and I suppose drums up all sort of things like conspiracy theories and whatever, but tell us exactly what the secret chambers are.
My theory is that the Great Pyramid, certainly above ground, was built as a repository for sacred artifacts and was sealed up as a kind of time capsule intended for future generations to break into and access their secret chambers. And I believe that many of the chambers we know today were originally designed as these secret chambers. But I do believe there are some clues in the monument which suggest some other secret chambers remain intact. The other part of my theory is that the pyramid was built by the ancient Egyptians and that it might well incorporate a tomb underneath the existing monument in a small cave known as the Grotto, which I believe may lead into a further network of subterranean caves where we might find the intact tomb of the pyramid's builder.
Now this is strange because I spent the weekend with Professor J.J. Hertak, who's done a lot of work out in Egypt, as you probably know, and he was talking about possible tunnels between the Sphinx and the pyramids. Would you agree with that theory?
That's a good theory, that there might be a subterranean tunnel between the pyramid and the Sphinx. I think there is some maybe tenuous evidence using radar to penetrate the bedrock, which might suggest the presence of a tunnel, but we just don't know for certain yet. But it would make sense, perhaps, if there are subterranean caves, it may be part of a very ancient network of caves which predates the building of the Great Pyramid.
So yes, I mean, this is fascinating because when you think of how many thousands of years ago some of these things were built, especially the Sphinx, and then we're looking at new developments now of things that still haven't been discovered. How much more treasure do you think there is out there?
Inside the Great Pyramid?
Everywhere across Egypt.
I think that, as Dr. Hawass has said, probably 80% of Egypt's treasures remain buried in the sand, remaining to be excavated. I think we've had a taste of that in various discoveries over the years, but it is interesting that apart from the tomb of Tutankhamun, we haven't discovered the intact tomb of a king. And what fascinates me is we have never discovered the intact tomb of a pyramid builder inside a pyramid. So this is another reason why I am pressurizing Egyptologists to pursue my suggestions with the Great Pyramid, because if we could discover some kind of tomb underneath the Great Pyramid, it would just be so exciting to see what they did bury with the king in those days. We don't really know. We assume that the king, during the Old Kingdom days, was buried with a lot of treasure, but we just don't know. It's a theory which has never really been tested.
Indeed. Now, this grotto theory, when you were explaining this at the Forbidden Knowledge Conference, you were saying that the king's chamber may not have been where he was actually buried, and that the king may have been buried in the grotto underneath. Now, explain that in a bit more depth for us, if you would.
I think the king's chamber was something else entirely. In common with several other researchers, I believe that the acoustic element in the king's chamber was very important. I think anybody who's been there can see that and feel that is part of the solution to the mystery. But I think the acoustic element was not part of any kind of funerary purpose, but was designed for the purpose of reenacting the moment of creation. I believe the entire pyramid, as every pyramid in Egypt was a simulacrum of the process of creation, according to the creation myth of the ancient Egyptians. And consistent with that, I think the sarcophagus in the king's chamber contained the sacred iron of creation in the form of iron meteorites, which I think is the first ever really serious, almost orthodox alternative theory for the contents of that sarcophagus, which is generally assumed to have contained the mummy of the pyramid builder. So I think if we can put a meteorite there, then we can start to look elsewhere in the pyramid for the tomb of the king.
Now, this is a theory, again, you brought out on Saturday, that because they worshipped meteorites, that meteorites could have been buried as treasure, if you like, within the coffins within the pyramid.
Exactly, but not buried below ground level. From what we know of meteorite worship in ancient Egypt, they liked to raise these meteorites on high. For example, the Benben stone, which we believe was a meteorite, was placed on top of a pillar in the temple at Heliopolis. Also, there was a meteorite worshipped at Thebes called the Carmutef, and in myth, that object is said to be lifted up towards the sky. And the reason for that is that according to the ancient Egyptians, at the time of creation, the material of the primeval earth, in other words, iron, they called it bjar, was blasted up into the sky in a kind of cataclysm. So for the Egyptians, the iron meteorite was something which originated in the earth and was lifted up into the sky, and I think that's what they were trying to reenact when they built these pillars or obelisks and placed meteorites on top of pillars.
That's interesting. Now, you also have a theory with regards to the shafts, don't you, in both the Queen's and King's chambers?
I have a theory. It's not one that I am as confident on as some of my other theories, but I have an inkling that perhaps those shafts are conduits to secret chambers. That raises eyebrows because they're only 8 inches wide. But it is possible that if the pyramid was built as some kind of time capsule, that the intention was that anybody breaking into the pyramid and gradually uncovering its secrets might have been intended to actually excavate along and upwards around those shafts in order to access whatever is above them. Shafts are a great mystery, and I think everybody is really floundering to explain just why they were built and yet sealed at the bottom and sealed at the top. So that's the best theory that I can come up with. Hopefully we can put this to the test very shortly.
Now, you also spoke of a robotic camera that was placed in one of the chambers that detected possibly a second doorway. Tell us about that.
Yes, the last robotic operation was in September 2002, which is nearly 4 years ago now. That's when the National Geographic Pyramid Rover drilled through the so-called Gansenbrink door. It did so, in fact, in both of the shafts. And in both cases, it found a small cavity, whereupon the shafts are then blocked by further stones. For some years now, Hawass has been promising to send a further robot up the shafts and break through the stones on the other side to see what lies there. The latest on that, which I've heard, is that in the last week of June, i.e. just over a week ago, there was a meeting in Cairo at which two teams, one of them is a British Hong Kong team, were asked to pitch their proposals against each other. And I believe there will be a runoff in September between the two robot designs, one from the University of Singapore and one from the British team. But the Singapore robot we haven't seen yet, but the British robot I do know something about. And all I can say is I don't want to say too much without betraying any confidences, but from what I've heard and what I hope to see shortly, it's been designed to cope with just about any eventuality that it might come across. The designer doesn't want to make the same mistake as last time, where the robot drilled through the door and then did not have the flexibility to do any kind of further follow-ups. For example, it couldn't even twist around and examine the back of the door that it drilled through. Whereas this new robot is designed with tremendous flexibility. For example, it's got a miniature robot attached to it which can travel down a ramp and then go on a walkabout to inspect any crevice in whatever kind of chamber it might discover.
That's fantastic. Now, you've got your own plans for some more exploration with regards to the grotto and other projects in Egypt. Tell us a little about that.
Yes, I am starting to talk to Egyptologists seriously about the possibility of exploring the grotto. I think what needs to happen first, I think, is to get the shafts exploration out of the way. I think that is almost an obstacle to progress at the moment. I think we need to get that exploration done before we move on to the next major exploration in the pyramid, which I feel must be an examination of the grotto. there are some very interesting anomalies there, which I mentioned in my lecture, and they are explained fully in my two books, Pyramid of Secrets and The Midnight Sun. What I've been doing over the past 2 years now is travelling up and down the country, giving lectures to ancient Egypt societies, meeting Egyptologists. For example, I was invited to give a presentation at the Egyptology Congress at Cambridge University last September, and I made some interesting contacts there. And I'm hoping that, I really do believe, actually, that Egyptologists will see the sense of what I am proposing, which is a very simple probing of the stones in the well shaft next to the grotto, and also of the very unusual ceiling in the grotto, to reveal whether there are further caves or crevices which have been screened off from our view deliberately to conceal the whereabouts of the tomb. So what I need to do is to go through official channels, hopefully through my old university, to put a serious proposal to the Supreme Council of Antiquities.
We wish you the very best of luck with that, certainly. Now, is there a website people can go to get the books?
Yes, my website is www.eridu.co.uk. Eridu is spelled E-R-I-D-U.
E-R-I-D-U, and that was .co.uk, yeah?
Yes.
Fantastic. Now, a couple of questions slightly off the wall for you, Alan. One of the things that Dr. Hertak was talking about at the weekend was the possibility of a second Sphinx underground. Have you heard anything on this?
I don't know anything tangible about that. No, I've heard speculations, but I don't know anything about that, really.
Apparently it's something that Graham Hancock is also working on, as I understand, and they believe that there could be a complete second building underneath the Sphinx itself. So that's something interesting to watch, I think. And the other thing that's, again, this is slightly off the wall, is I was regressed once. Now, I'm one of these people that I don't disbelieve anything until I've proven otherwise, because I've seen so many strange things in my life now. I never sort of say that anything's impossible until I've proven that it is. But during this regression, I spoke about another son of Akhenaten, and that's a brother to Tutankhamun that the world doesn't know about yet, who's buried with a sister in a secret golden chamber. Now, would any of this make any sense to you?
Not necessarily, but I'm not an expert on that period in Egyptian history. So I couldn't really comment about that period. My expertise really is in the Old Kingdom and the classical religion. As you probably know, Akhenaten was a heretic who changed the religion more to a philosophy of light and away from the old mythological traditions involving the gods and the circuit of the sun. So I can't really comment about that, but what you're saying sounds eminently plausible.
Mm. It's an interesting one, because it says this secret golden chamber hasn't yet been discovered. Now, obviously, I've sort of sat back and thought, well, I'll wait and see, but if something does suddenly get discovered, I think I'll be as shocked as anybody. But it's one of those things, when it happens, it does sort of make you think and wonder whether perhaps there is something out there yet that's... and as you said, 80% of the treasures still haven't been found, so you never know, do you?
Absolutely. You need to put the theory out there and... state clearly where you think it will be, and then you'll get some credit when it's discovered.
That's right. Well, let's hope. Alan, thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us today. I know you're very busy. Just give us that website address once more, if you would.
Okay, it's www.eridu.co.uk. That's Eridu, E-R-I-D-U, which was, of course, the home of Enki, the Mesopotamian god. And that's the place to find me.
Fantastic. And I hope you'll come back on the show and talk to us some more once you've done the exploration of the grotto.
Absolutely.
That's fantastic, Alan. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Ross.